You are probably not as excited about vinegar as our next guest is, but that's okay. He is here to win you over. He says that sour flavor is something we crave, and it can be the key to unlocking additional flavors in our cooking. We're going to find out more about incorporating that tangy vinegar flavor into some dishes and how to make our own vinegar, too. Turns out it's not all that hard. Jonathan Sawyer is a chef, a founder of several restaurants, living in Cleveland, Ohio. He's won a James Beard Award, calls himself Vinegar Obsessed, and is the author of the new cookbook, House of Vinegar, The Power of Sour. John, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Absolute pleasure for having me on.
Well, now, I like vinegar. I'm liking it more and more over the years, but I don't hold a candle to you. You are really into vinegar. What led you down that path?
Well, if we look at vinegar historically, it predates ale, wine, and even citrus fruit in recipes. It is the original balancer of flavors, and not to mention many other phenomenal properties that it can possess. But for us, it was really about making something that, even if our recipes are the same as our neighbors, makes us just a little bit different. And when you make your own vinegar, when you have your own craftsmanship of anything that's sort of, you know, fata en casa or made in the house, you have that opportunity to really put your thumbprint on what you're cooking.
And you have a wide variety of recipes in the book, not just on making vinegar, but how to use it. And it's everything from, you know, marinating an entree or in a salsa and sauces, all the way to bringing out flavors in desserts. I don't think most people think of vinegar as being that flexible.
Truly. And in addition to, you know, a small chapter on how to and cocktails. But, you know, some of the greatest recipes that we uncovered over our years of sort of replacing citrus with vinegar as an act of being more local than, you know, sort of our neighbors, we found American dessert recipes from the Dust Bowl and from the Depression when, you know, money was tight. And they use vinegar and baking soda as a leavener more often than anything else because chicken eggs were, you know, your main source of protein. If you didn't have money, you would never waste them on a dessert. So there is a huge tradition, especially in America, of using vinegar in desserts.
We'll get into making our own vinegar, but suppose we're not quite there yet. How do we pick good stuff? How do we know if we're getting good vinegar if we're buying it at the store?
Well, beyond the obvious, you know, look at the list of ingredients. If you see fructose, corn syrup, sugar, food dye, don't buy it. Don't even spend a dollar on it. Don't even clean your windows with it because distilled vinegar is made natural and only 10% more expensive than the other garbage. Secondly, I think a born-on date is more important than an expire date, and that is universal for any product you're buying. And I think thirdly, if you see sediment and cloudy or the words live, active, or probiotic, that's a vinegar that is phenomenal and one you want to buy.
And what should be in our arsenal, whether we make it ourselves or are buying it off the rack? What kind of vinegars do you recommend we have in our toolkit?
Oh, honestly, Rob, that's one of the greatest questions someone's asked me about the book is, what does the vinegar pantry look like in an ideal home scenario? For us, we really like to have two sort of high-quality vinegars that are red wine and or sherry, and then we have what we call workhorse vinegars. One of them would be white, and that could be white wine or champagne or rice wine, depending on your, let's say, continent of inspiration of most common cuisine. And I think the last one would be either malt or beer. So you have four vinegars total at your house.
So beer vinegar. I got to say, I don't think I've ever in my life interacted with beer vinegar.
Unknowingly, I think you have interacted with regularly because malt vinegar is just malted
beer.
Oh,
okay. So I've had it all the time then.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you've had fish and chips, you've had beer vinegar of some sort.
I get it. Okay. Now, we're talking about the new book, House of Vinegar, with Jonathan Sawyer, about how to use vinegar and, yes, how to make it. And we'll get into some recipes in just a bit, what we can do with vinegar, store-bought or homemade. John, I want to look at making vinegar. What I love about a lot of your recipes is there are precisely in a lot of these one ingredient.
Yes. You know, I think the book for us was really important, it being our second. The first one called Noodle Kids, which my kids and I wrote, of just sort of how to cook at home, and my wife as well. This one is more sort of, this is what we do. This is what vinegar is. It's a singular ingredient, and you don't realize how important it is, almost all the way to the point where you think of, like, salt is number one, vinegar is number two, then fat, then sugar, then umami, in terms of balancing your taste buds.
And if we want to try making our own, we just want to make, say, a basic red wine vinegar, talk us through the procedure. How hard is this?
It's actually the easiest thing in the world, and naturally it's what any liquid that has just a little bit of sugar, just a little bit of carbohydrates, and just a little bit of protein, which is naturally present inside of every vegetable and every fruit that you consume on your daily basis. So wine vinegar takes typically 3 times longer than, let's just call them, malted vinegars. So whether it's a beer vinegar or it's a malt vinegar, those are vinegars you're going to see, or cider vinegar, those are vinegars that you're going to see very quick results, and it's going to be really rewarding and help you sort of build up to the time that you would wait for a red wine or white wine vinegar. So my recommendation for home vinegar, you know, aficionados, is to buy a beer that has no hops in it, that has sort of the biggest grain bill that you can think of, but is less than 15% alcohol, and you pour it into a container, you put a cheesecloth over top of it, you keep it away from cleaning products and cat urine and sunlight, and about a month later, you'll have vinegar. Now, there's a little more involved in that, but what I'm saying is that any liquid that you put in a jar and allow to access itself to oxygen will eventually turn into vinegar. So the brewer and the winemaker's job is actually to stop that liquid right before it turns into vinegar.
Yeah, vinegar wants to make itself, it sounds like.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the flora and fauna that are in the air naturally, you know, either reacting with our allergies or interacting with our plants, it has the acetobacter, as it's called in the nerd world, of what will make vinegar, what will turn a liquid through that time, oxygen, and you know, the other requisite sort of liquids that turn it into vinegar.
Let's start putting our vinegar to work. You shared a few recipes with us, and we've got the recipes and the vinegar recipes to go along with them at WPR.org/Food Friday. Now, I love doing a quick fridge pickle. I'm a big fan of this lately. You've got a modern classic red onion pickle. That sounds like it'd be, I mean, I almost want a snack on it. It'd be great in salads, on a sandwich, whatever. Talk about this red onion pickle we make with vinegar.
I mean, true story, right? It is a modern classic because just like sun-dried tomatoes in the late 90s and pork belly in the early 2000s, every modern restaurant has a red onion pickle, and every restaurant has a mild variation. And I think that's the fun of being at home, is you can look at your red onions or your white onions, you could look at our recipe, you could look at your inspiration and just tweak it a little bit to be yours. But every burger, every salad, every braise, every gremolata tastes better with just a little bit of that punchy, crunchy pickled red onion.
And after the initial processing here, it's just sitting in the fridge for about a day and then it's ready to rock?
Yeah, and honestly, you could do it the same day. For us, it's kind of, you know, not yielding the same results as a, you know, 6 months slow fermentation lacto pickle. But if you're making a burger tonight and you got some leftover red onion from last night, you just simply boil it rather than pouring the hot liquid over top and allowing it to rest. And so you just make a pickling liquid, essentially poach the onions in that pickling liquid, allow it to rest, allow it to cool, and boom, you got a pickle.
Now, my surprise ingredient in this one, I'm seeing kombucha.
Yeah, I mean, what we found is through this sort of life of researching fermentation, there is so much synergy between kombucha, beer, wine, vinegar, sourdough bread, yogurt, and cheese, that oftentimes when you combine the two in a recipe, it's just sort of magnifying what you're doing with the natural base ingredient.
That's fine. Now, we'll get to a couple more recipes in just a bit, but let's just talk about, hey, you're cooking some kind of meat. You want to marinate it for a bit or have a sauce for it. How do we match the right vinegar to the right meat and the right recipe that goes with it?
You know, the old adage is true. If it grows together, it goes together. So, you know, red wine vinegar and Japanese food, not too many places where it's going to make sense. Rice wine vinegar or a very clean white wine vinegar, okay, you're gonna figure that part out. But it's also about personal taste and sort of where you are in terms of acidity. You know, every vinegar can have a variation of all the way down to 1.4 pH and up to 3.7 pH. Obviously, 7 being a basic, you know, sort of flat liquid. So there is, you know, many different minutiae to sort of look at when you're thinking about it. But for us, it's always an equation of how much fat is in the product that we're going to enjoy, what temperature is going to be served at, how much sugar and salt are in there, and then we balance that. The only balancer inside of all of those components is the vinegar, is the acidity, or a combination of vinegar and citrus.
We're talking to John Sawyer, chef and restaurant owner in Cleveland. He's talking to us about how to make our own vinegar, how to cook with vinegar. He's the author of the new book, House of Vinegar, The Power of Sour. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you love to cook with vinegar? What kind or kinds do you use? What do you like to use them for? What kind of recipes? Do you have a favorite vinaigrette salad dressing to buy or make yourself? Have you ever tried to make your own vinegar? Do you want some advice for our guests on how to make your own or how to use vinegar in your own cooking? Maybe something you have planned for this weekend. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page, and there it'll link over to WPR.org/Food Friday. You can get a few of the recipes for what to do with vinegar and how to make some of your own. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with Chef John Sawyer. He's the owner of several Ohio restaurants, and he's the author of the new cookbook, House of Vinegar, The Power of Sour. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you use lots of vinegar in your cooking? What kinds? Are you a vinegar nerd? Have you ever made your own? Our guest's new book has a lot of advice and recipes on how to do exactly that, make a bunch of different kinds of vinegar. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. To your calls now. Rebecca is with us in Madison. Rebecca, hi there.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Rebecca?
Well, I'm calling because I had recently made chicken adobo, and it seems that vinegar is like one of the main ingredients in chicken adobo. And you cook it in, I think there's like two thirds a cup in the recipe. And I wasn't terribly satisfied. I liked it. It was fine. But I wonder, is there a particular kind of vinegar you should use for that kind of recipe?
What kind did you use, Rebecca?
Yeah, the old white.
Was it braised or marinated? If you could tell me too, because then I can help you decipher it.
If you brown the chicken, little slices of chicken breast, and then you add in, then you do like vinegar and onion, and then you cook it in the vinegar, no, garlic and onion, then you cook it in the vinegar and soy sauce, and I use just like regular white vinegar that's been in my cupboard.
Gotcha.
Yes, like a distilled white vinegar? So for me, I think distilled white vinegar is a great use in sort of very extreme versions of pickling. As a cooking medium, it isn't phenomenal. I think about vinegar the same way I think about wine. If I would drink it as a glass of wine, I would cook with it. If I taste the vinegar and say, this tastes okay, I could make a vinaigrette from this, I would use it in cooking, saucing, brining, etc. If it doesn't taste good, I would know that this is something that is too high of an acidity or too singular of a taste for me to actually enhance my dish with. So I'll use it just for a marinade or for a pickle. And I also think adobo is a very personal thing, too. You know, from mom to mom, to house to house, whether you're in Puerto Rico or Mexico or even other parts of the world, you could see a little bit of orange juice replace that 100% vinegar, and it's a little bit of a milder, sweeter sort of finish.
Right. And if she wanted to try a different vinegar, what would she reach for in an adobo?
I would say a white wine vinegar or a very light beer vinegar would be ideal. Champagne vinegar may have too much acidity, similar to the white distilled vinegar, but it all depends on brand and pH.
Fantastic. Rebecca, I hope that helps out with the next round of chicken adobo. We'll go now to George with us in Green Bay. George, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you have for us, George?
Oh, I was happy to hear there's a vinegar cookbook. I love vinegars.
Me too, brother.
It's so easy to use, to do like a hot meat salad. I tend to use lamb for myself, but other people like beef. Where you just saute off the cubes of tenderloin really quick, get some shallots, deglaze the pan with a little bit of apple cider or sherry vinegar, add a little walnut oil, and then sprinkle some goat cheese on top of like arugula.
Ooh.
And then just take in, and you take the, obviously you take the beef out before you deglaze the pan. Just put on the salad and just deglaze it and pour it on top. It's great stuff. Just pepper, black pepper on it.
Fantastic, George. Thanks a lot. And John, can you talk about how vinegar brings out, it's not just the flavor of the vinegar, talk about how it brings out some of those other flavors. In this case, it was beef or lamb and the goat cheese and the arugula, but it plays well with others very often.
Yeah, much like salt, and when we're talking about the equation of flavor, it enhances all properties of whatever it is involved with. So whether it's finishing a sauce, like George said, and deglazing the pan and making a hot vinaigrette, you will take the caramelized bit of either lamb or beef, depending on what you're doing, and you will enhance it with the acidity, which allows your taste buds to experience and open, you know, the entirety of your mouth, what is good inside of that beef or lamb.
George, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Jonathan Sawyer, his new book is House of Vinegar, The Power of Sour. Back to your calls now. Jim is with us in St. Croix Falls. Jim, hello.
Hi.
Hi, what did you want to ask about?
Well, I wanted to ask a little bit more about the actual making of vinegar. Doesn't it start out with alcohol? And how do you, and the mother of vinegar, could you talk a little bit more about that and how you determine at the beginning of the process how strong your vinegar, what percentage it would be at the end of the process?
Great. Thanks for the call. Let's start with, you mentioned the mother of vinegar, John, and that's a that's a part of the equation. What is that?
So the mother of vinegar is also sometimes referred to as SCOBY, which stands for System of Coexisting Bacteria, Organisms, and Yeast. And whether you're talking about yogurt, cheese, kombucha, or vinegar, that is what Acetobacter transfers, whatever your base is, to eventually what your finished product is. Now, you can buy mother online, and that's fine, and that's something that you do maybe to kickstart it, but inevitably, if you're making vinegar, you will have a mother whether you see it or not. In some of the extreme and longer fermentations, the mother can end up looking like almost like a jellyfish, where these sort of different microorganisms sort of bind to each other and float in the middle of the product. So it looks really cool and it's very easy to sell, but at the end of the day, it's going to turn into vinegar no matter what you do. So you can spend the money and you can make it that, and that's good, and that'll kickstart it. But you also can just pour the liquid into a vessel that's porous and wait, and eventually you will have your own mother, and that is individual to you and your neighborhood.
And Jim was also wondering about, you know, starting at the outset and figuring out how strong you want your vinegar to be. What kind of things determine that?
Way less complicated question than mother and SCOBY, for sure. For us, there's a weird thing about acidity and basicness that people don't often understand, but the reduction of acidity does not increase the pH of acidity. So if I have a gallon of vinegar and I reduce it to a tablespoon, it'll be the exact same sourness as it was at the end as it is in the beginning. So what we like to do with our vinegars, and we call it sort of jokingly but almost seriously, we take them to clinical strength, right? So we take them to the most acidic place that we can sort of taste with our taste buds. Typically, that's at about a 1.7 on a pH scale. 3.5 is federally approved as safe, right? So you're going below 3.5. And then, as a cook or as a home cook, you have the opportunity to either dilute your vinegar or use it at that full strength. So we try to take our vinegars as sour as possible, but they are safe at 3.5.
And how do you control that acidity when you set it up?
It's time. So what we do is, you know, there's a timeline on everything, right? I said beer vinegar goes as quick as 1 month. Red wine vinegar, the quickest I've ever done it in the natural process, which is what we do, is 6 months. But we smell it on a regular basis, and acidity is very, very easy to identify. And then as you do it more often, understand how intense it is. And when it smells to us and the time is close enough to us that we think it is a vinegar, we just take a pH strip. Just, you can buy them anywhere. They're the cheapest thing you could ever imagine. You pop it in there, and you understand what acidity you're at. And if you want it to be stronger or you want it to be more acidic, you just wait longer. Or what you could do is, you know, say you're at a 3.0 and you don't need that much vinegar. You can just take out a little bit of vinegar and add more of the liquid that the vinegar was based on back in, and it'll speed up the process for the next time. So like great vinegar makers, probably most specifically Italians and Spaniards, what they would do in their home kitchen is, you know, they obviously have a little more restraint on drinking than Americans, most specifically myself, but at the end of supper, they would take whatever wine is left over, they would pour it into their vinegar vats, And then the next day, they could use that exact same vat of vinegar because it is so old and it is so active, it is so low in pH, that they can pull some out and they have vinegar that is nonstop, almost on tap.
Thanks a lot for that call. I want to take a quick peek, John, before we're done, at this other recipe you gave us at WPR.org/Food Friday, the apple tart tatin. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Just briefly sell us on that one.
Yeah, I mean, that is, you know, not American apple pie because it's probably closer to ches pie, but it is the quickest, most delicious way to celebrate the fall season. And puff pastry is something you can make a labor of love or you can purchase at the store. But the balance of apple acidity plus vinegar acidity plus caramelized sugar plus dough is bliss.
And that's with apple cider vinegar to complement those apples.
Absolutely, if possible. But I also love beer vinegar in there. You know, apple, it's such a robust dessert. You know, we're not talking about like something that can't take a little bit of a bruising or a hard pairing. You can use almost any vinegar in that recipe because of the caramelized sugar and because of the identity of the apples. It's basically fancy French apple pie.
John, thanks a lot for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun.
My pleasure, absolutely.
That's Jonathan Sawyer. He's a chef and founder of several restaurants living in Cleveland, Ohio. He's won a James Beard Award. He describes himself as vinegar obsessed. His new book is House of Vinegar, The Power of Sour. You can find the recipes we talked about today and one more, sauerkraut balls that use some of his vinegar. They use the vinegars he talks about, plus some explanations of how to make a couple of the kinds of vinegar in his book. You can find those online at WPR.org/Food Friday. Get there via the Ideas Network Facebook page. I see we've got at least one listener recipe up there that looks really good, too. You can share your favorite ways to use vinegar and maybe a picture of your vinegar-making apparatus if you do that at home.